All right, folks, this is the Instant Reaction Podcast. I am Ingram Smith, filling in for Bud, who normally does these. So, really interesting game that we just saw there, and try to give as good of an idea as to what I saw and just an immediate take or instant reaction on a game that at halftime, honestly, I'd pretty much written off, and a game that had so many plays that were just kind of microcosms or snapshots as to some of the difficulties and frustrations that have surrounded this year. Really good effort in the second half. Thought the defense played fairly consistent throughout the game. Maybe ran out of gas a little bit just there at the end. But I thought you got everything you could have asked for from your defense. When we talked about the fact that we really liked how the personnel here matched up with Clemson, and that if the defense played as a unit and the defense played with some kind of collective idea as to what all different aspects or different levels of the defense were trying to do, that thought you could be pretty competitive with what Clemson's offense was trying to do. And honestly, at times, that offense looks pretty pedestrian. And that was the case. I thought you got an incredible play out of your defensive line. Derek Naughty continues to have an exceptional season. Josh Sweat played really well. I think in review, he's probably responsible for that third fumble that's caused. Brian Burns had a nice day, obviously making pretty significant plays behind the line of scrimmage. DeMarcus Christmas maybe wasn't quite the game that he had against Miami or Alabama, but played played really well and is doing nothing but elevating his draft stock. So I thought the front four played particularly well. Linebackers played okay. Hoskins at time didn't have his best game, was probably responsible for at least not closing down enough on the one long run in the first half from Etienne. Matthew Thomas at times kind of question. I don't want to question a kid's effort, but Matthew Thomas, there's just a lot of plays where I wonder if you're getting everything that kid has to give. So frustrating at times. I thought the linebackers were okay. Secondary was decent at times. Also, you know, the pass interference that Levante Taylor gets in the first half is particularly frustrating. You got decent coverage there. You just make a stupid play. I will mention that Taylor, again, is beat for a touchdown on the sack that occurs late in the fourth quarter, or I guess in the middle part of the fourth quarter. Bryant just doesn't get the ball out of his hand for whatever reason, but he has about 35 yards of space to throw into and let his wide receiver run underneath the ball, but doesn't happen. I really like Taylor as a player. He seems to be a positive impact on the program, but need a little bit more progression from him as a defensive back. So, on offense, and the first half was as frustrating as anything that you've seen. I personally liked the game plan. It was more or less what we talked about. Took a lot of deep, tried the Clemson defense, took a lot of deep shots on first down, and unfortunately just didn't connect on any in the first half. Second half, you have a fourth and one call, or fourth and two, that you frustratingly have to burn a timeout on to set up. I'll come back to that later in the instant. But you do call a timeout, and you put together a hell of a play, a little bit of play action. You have Gavin wide open, and or no, that's Auden Tate, I'm sorry. That is Auden Tate on the first one, excuse me. But you have Tate wide open. You throw a nice little, what looks like a little corner route, and that play has to be made. I mean, it was a well-called play. Line gave you decent enough protection, and you just miss him. And that kid's 6'5". You can't miss him. It's got to be in an area where he can make a play. If he does, and he's able to keep his feet, that's almost certainly a touchdown. There's another really well-called play that you scheme Nooney Murray as wide open as you're going to see in college football, and you just can't make the play. It's again, overthrown. A little bit critical of Murray on that play as well, but nonetheless, when you've got somebody that wide open, that's got to be a reception. You can't come up with nothing when you scheme somebody really without anybody within 25, 30 yards of him. So there were some times where I thought the coaching staff really did some nice things. Obviously, it's not a double pack pass, but it's kind of a double flea flicker, and you scheme Izzo open for a 30, 45-yard gain, and then he makes also some nice downfield blocking there, but he makes one guy miss and ends up taking it to the house. And at that point, it's 14-17, and Florida State is in a game that it really could have otherwise been leading at that point. So you miss the two touchdowns on offense just because you can't make a wide-open play. So I leave this game happy with the effort of the defense. I leave this game really frustrated at Florida State not being able to make the plays that were necessary to win the game. And I'm a little frustrated with the progression out of what you're seeing at your quarterback. Obviously, this kid's a true freshman. He didn't early enrollee, or he was not an early enrollee. But he's also started 8 games now, and there's some things that Blackman's doing that is a little disconcerting if you're looking for progression, particularly some of the reads that he makes before the ball snapped. On the initial fumble that Trey Lamar makes and ends up recovering, that is completely on Blackman. You have the back pick up a blitz. You've got to be better at understanding what you're looking at before the ball snapped and understanding that you're going to have pressure. And you've got to account for that. And at times, the offensive line just is not going to have the numbers to pick up everybody, and that's on you. So it's got to be a situation where you either see something and throw it, or you see something and throw it 10 yards into the stands. You just can't sit there and ultimately take a snap, lose the ball, and put your defense in a place to where they ultimately give up the first points of the game. So I liked parts of the game plan, but also some real questionable aspects of coaching. The fact that you're having Blackman in the first half throw out of the end zone on really slow developing plays, I just really question that. Why you're having a kid, third and one from your own one, or not third and one, third and long from your own one, or you maybe two, and you end up getting the ball stripped, and Everly fortunately picks it up. But that's a real questionable play call, and I'm not a big fan of individual play calls being questioned, but I'm just not sure. Like, Jimbo Fisher is such a conservative play caller with things that he does. We've talked about his third down math and things like that. But it also, like, if you're going to be that conservative and then pair, like, a slow-developing seven-step drop out of your own end zone when you're playing the best or the second-best defensive line you're going to play all year, I don't want to be overly critical of singular play calls, but I've just really wondered what we were thinking when that was the play that we decided to go to. One other criticism of coaching that I want to make. And when you're 6-3, excuse me, when you're 3-6, there's going to be a lot of things that you can be critical of. And I don't want to be overly critical in a game in which I thought the team gave pretty good effort and you played about as well as could be expected when you're playing one of the better rosters that you're going to face all year. But there's a series of events in the third quarter that I think was exceptionally illuminating. And, you know, you really sacrifice some things that at times when you're watching a game on TV, but you also occasionally get a rare glimpse into aspects that you wouldn't otherwise if you were just, handed an all-22 and were watching that to review a game. I think it's 3rd and 2, and it's in the third quarter, and it's ultimately the series of events that leads to the first really important overthrow of Tate that I referenced previously. But it's 3rd and 2, and you run a real slow developing running play to a running back that's just coming off an injury, which I'm questioning all aspects of that component of the play and your decision making there. But ultimately, Patrick puts the ball out, but still is about, 10 to 18 inches short of the first down, maybe more, maybe a full yard and a half. But what you get is you get a TV shot that immediately cuts to Jimbo Fisher, who is sitting there with his two or three, really large play sheets, and you see a coach just start searching through a play sheet. And he ends up not getting the play called in until either somewhere between 15 and 17 seconds in the play clock. And Florida State's plays have to go from Fisher to Sanders, Sanders to Blackman, Blackman to the team. And you end up having to use a timeout there, which is unacceptable. I don't understand how that's possible. First of all, if it's third down, you know damn well that there's a possibility for a fourth down. So what are you doing when your running back gets stopped short, starting the play process for fourth down upon seeing him get tackled? That's got to be a situation where you at least have some idea as to what your fourth down play is going to be. Where I'm really critical here is that not so much that you had to use a timeout, because I've almost come to expect that out of Florida State's offense. I'm really critical of your coach that you start yelling at a freshman quarterback for not getting the play in on time, and for him being the reason that you had to use that timeout. That's absolutely not the case. That's solely on you, Jimbo Fisher. And what it was, and I don't want to make too big of a deal out of one play, but it was a great encapsulation of a system that's just flat-ass broken. It is. This is not working with what we're trying to do right now, with Jimbo Fisher trying to be everything to all points of at least the offense. You're cheating yourself. You're cheating your offense. You're cheating your team. It's just not a system right now, or it's not a situation, in my opinion, that's something that's like a tenable, workable situation. I love Jimbo Fisher, the offensive mind. I love Jimbo Fisher, the overall manager of a program. I love a lot of aspects that come with Jimbo Fisher being your head coach. But right now, he's trying to do too many things at once. And as a byproduct, he's really letting down the side of the ball that he's tasked to coach. So I don't know if that means that you get somebody that you feel more comfortable, at least with the person who has the title of offensive coordinator. I don't know, but the idea that everything is funneling through one guy is, for whatever reason, it's not working. So just a rare little glimpse of things that you don't always see on TV, and I don't know that I did the best job of encapsulating exactly what happened. I don't know that the podcast format is a best situation to try to describe that series of events, but it was a glimpse into just a system that's not frustrating. Excuse me, a system that's wildly frustrating, but a system that's not functioning at a high enough level. So something to keep in mind, something to look at moving forward, and an area of the program that really needs to progress. Far too many times, we give a quarterback a play with 7 and 12 seconds, and it's just not good enough. It's not enough time. And we're so lost in trying to find this one fleeting kind of magical play. And to credit Jimbo Fisher, with a timeout, he found it. But that's not, you don't get to do that. You only get three of those things. And again, Florida State's in a critical situation in the fourth down. They've got one timeout because they've wasted it on poor situational gameplay earlier in the half. You had to call a timeout. Your punt team had to call a timeout, and you had to call a timeout because you weren't ready for a second play in a two-down situation. So I don't want to harp on one thing. I probably talk too much about it in general, but it was just a little glimpse into a situation that somehow has to be improved and has to be a more player-favorable outcome, where you give your quarterback, where you're not wasting timeouts, where you're not putting a true freshman quarterback in a rush situation where he's got to run to the line and snap the ball with 3 seconds left on a fourth and one. That's not the level of football that Florida State people expect, and that's not the level of football that is that pairs with Florida State's spending on coaches and its head coach's salary in particular. So, on the whole, Florida State's 3-6. Yeah, there might have been inches in this particular play, this particular game, where you miss wide open wide receivers, where Matthew Thomas has a chance to pick up a ball in the open field and just whiffs on it entirely. I don't understand that. In that situation, you've got to at least get a hand on the ball, Matthew. I mean, get a hand on the ball and at least send it at least send it in a positive direction. I really don't understand how, with three guys standing over the ball, you at least don't kick it downfield accidentally. And I remember in high school that we used to do drills where if you were going to try to scoop a fumble, at the very least, you moved it in a positive direction, as opposed to just, I don't know. That play was just stupid and frustrating, and I don't blame the kid for trying to make a play at that point in time. It looked like a situation like that may damn well be the only way that Florida State was going to score, but you've at least got to get a hand on that ball and not let it just lay dead on the turf because you picked your head up and ran right over it. So Florida State's 3-6. Florida State's in a situation where it has to win three games to become bowl eligible. Is that possible? Yeah, it's definitely possible. You look at what Florida did again today, and you probably think that that's a game you can win and that Florida State continue its bowl streak. But it's a really tough season, man, and that wouldn't have been anything that would have healed all the problems that exist within the program, and it wouldn't have changed the trajectory of the season, and it wouldn't have saved a recruiting class that ultimately is not going to probably be as good as it could have been, but it would have been a real nice moment for a season that hasn't had any if you're a Florida State fan. And unfortunately, you just didn't make the little plays that were necessary to win that game. You didn't hit wide open wide receivers. You didn't pick up the ball when it was on the ground, and you didn't play smart enough situationally to beat a team that quite honestly didn't play anywhere near what the number four team in the country you would expect to look like. So another disappointing day for Florida State, but it's certainly the outcome that we probably expected. So hats off to Clemson. Best of luck to them the rest of the year. Hope that they are conference champions ultimately, because it's official now that Clemson and Miami will be your representatives in the ACC championship game. But now I'll be back on Monday, and we'll do more of our traditional format. Certainly appreciate the listens. It's been a very popular period of time for the Knollcast. Want to thank you for recent 5-star reviews on iTunes and shares and mentions on social media. It's been a really frustrating season, and at times it's tough to talk about something that I enjoy doing this podcast and love being able to talk about Florida State, but at the same time really love the program and a big fan, and it's not always a whole lot of fun to watch a team that continually kind of makes you bang your head into a wall. But appreciate you guys bearing with us and giving us a listen and contributing to the show in the form of feedback or listener questions, and want to always thank our sponsors. So appreciate the support that Madison Social and Louisiana Hot Sauce gives us, and the fact that they make podcasts like this possible. Would encourage anybody to support our socials, our sponsors on social media in any way possible. If you're in Tallahassee, make a point to try to go to one of the four fabulous properties that make up the For the Table restaurant group. And when you're going through the grocery store next time, grab a bottle of Louisiana Hot Sauce if you would. It's a great product, and it's a great way to support podcasts like these. Thank you, as always. Look forward to speaking with you on Monday.